It's Wednesday, August 16th, and we're here for the Sled City Hall meeting.
Oh, that's cool.
This is a joint session, if we can get Doug to turn down his phone.
Wow. Sorry about that.
A joint session is just where we have a conversation between the county commissioners and the people of Sled. So we have some issues that have been discussed on the agenda, to be discussed on the agenda. And we'll do an introduction first. So let's start here, Doug.
Doug Hunt, Commissioner.
Terry Thompson, Commissioner.
Bill Hall, Commissioner.
Who's ever?
Joe Clark, City Council.
Ron Irby, City Council.
Cheryl Simmons, City Recorder, Selects.
Alan Meadow, Public Works Director for Superintendent, City Selects.
You guys want to use the chairs up here, or do you feel more comfortable there?
We're fine.
We sit too close on
that. We don't buy it.
That worries me. Okay. So we've done the introductions.
The mayor. We didn't get everybody.
Oh, did I skip one?
John Robinson, mayor.
You weren't sitting over there. I apologize.
Separation of power, right?
Okay, the first subject to be talked about is the Lincoln County Commons update.
Bill? Wayne, do you want to lead off and
sure.
I could amplify? Or
First of all, I think we should probably announce, of course, that this coming weekend is the Lincoln County Fair. So, a good time. I think it's going to be a little bit crazy, but we also thought this was the traditional weekend for doing it, and the fair board decided to go ahead with the fair this weekend. They are holding over to Monday. So actually, they will be available during the Eclipse event. They actually got a couple of the vendors will stay. There'll be food. There'll be libations. There'll be we've got extra porta potties and extra potable water. That's the two things we made sure to get. So that's going on this particular weekend.
Yeah, grounds will open at 8 o'clock Monday morning and not close until the last person is left.
So don't forget to attend the fair this week, amongst the other various other things that are going on. So I provided in the materials, and I'm not sure if that got shared.
I guess I can get up here.
There you go. Okay, so you want me to move up here?
Wherever you're comfortable. Yeah, that's fine.
So one thing that we're doing right now is an update and refinement of our master plan for the Commons, home of the Lincoln County Fair. And we have selected a contractor who is going to do a very, very engaging process with the community to kind of get us to the next level, which is, you know, what are we going to do to redevelop the grounds out there? What do we want to put together? We've done a lot of different planning processes over the years, and one of the kind of key concepts that's come through that process is replacement of the current exhibition hall with the new exhibition hall. So that's sort of a centerpiece of where we're going to go. But we really have to decide what else we want out there. You know, there's been a lot of discussion around, you know, appropriate other open spaces, other buildings, arena. What does that kind of entail, where we want to go? So this will be an opportunity for the community to come together, the entire county. And one of the things we've been stressing through this process is that although it's located in Newport, this is Lincoln County's Commons. And Lincoln County's fair, so it's for the entire county. One of the things we would like to do is encourage representatives from various communities to get on our steering committee. We'll be looking to the city, actually, to designate somebody, if somebody's willing to serve on our committee to help us with this process, somebody who has an interest in what's happening at the Commons and the fair, to come on board. And there's going to be a lot of meetings around the entire county, a lot of activities going on, and the end result we hope is that within by the end of this particular period here we can move forward. One of the things that's really actually good about this process is that we're actually approaching it a little bit differently than a lot of public works projects, and that is the fact that we've put together a lot of the financial components of this process already. There are some dedicated funds that the voters of Lincoln County have approved, both for capital construction and then when this is developed for operation. Interestingly enough, the city of Newport included this particular area in the project in their Newport Urban Renewal Plan. And they've got some funding actually designated. Likely that's going to be more towards the improvements that will be necessary to the infrastructure around there, sewer, water, the streets. We've got to improve the road system that leads to the site out there. Those kinds of additional improvements in that area. But they're going to bring some funding to the table. So that really gives us a kind of a leg up when we do our planning here, that we're going to be able to look at a variety of things that we can do. So, Bill, I'll turn over to you for a little bit more, but we do want to have a designated person from East County. We'd like somebody from this area from Insulet, so.
Yeah, I think you covered a lot of the most important points, Wayne. That we've had several rounds of public input, and I think we've settled a lot of things, you know, staying on the current site being the only feasible option, that the new exhibition hall be the first phase and really the centerpiece that drives the rest of the redevelopment. But here, the outcome when they finish up next year will be to have a plan all ready to go, all ready to build. And just one interesting little thing, end of January, when we had the rain so heavy, a sinkhole opened up on the grounds. Not a large one, would you say, Roy, in area, but deep, real deep. And finally, a few weeks ago, we were able to get it dug out and found, you know, we already knew that a lot of the grounds was fill, but this was amazing. Didn't they go down 25 feet, Roy? Or so?
When I was there, they were down 25, and then I think they went an extra couple feet.
Okay.
Trying to get that tree rooted out.
Yeah, there was a steel rooted tree down there. There were old tires, chain link fencing. But Jim Beisman said he expected to discover the kitchen sink, but he didn't. But what that tells us is, you know, some people have talked about like reorienting the whole property with maybe having the new exhibit hall facing out on 7th Street. Well, you know, if you're willing to sink a whole lot of extra money into pilings and foundations, maybe that could happen, but it just wouldn't make sense when at least part of the grounds we know is stable enough to support structures. So that's something that will need to be taken into account. The city money, I think they haven't really locked this in, but they've indicated probably they would rather have it be for support infrastructure rather than for buildings, and that's fine because we know there's going to need to be a lot of water, sewer work. We're going to look for opportunities, hopefully, to pick up some more parking in the immediate area, but it's finally moving, and that's nice.
So what caused the sinkhole?
We think it was right at the end of January, you know, when we had the several days of rain. They never really found specifically what might have caused it to open up. But
I think that it was kind of a combination of several things, because you had the standing tree there.
Yeah.
It was still solid, but there wasn't really much bark on it. You had a bunch of concrete chunks that were kind of loosely stacked in there. You know, I think what it was that over time, it was kind of sifting down through the gaps. And finally, it got worked its way to the top, and then the sod fell in. Mm. So it wasn't like there was water. We didn't find much water, and a little bit of groundwater. So just poor compaction.
Yeah. Okay. And we'll down to noxious vegetation in Lincoln County. Roy, it's yours.
Looks like I win.
Yeah, this is the spot.
By the time we're done, everybody in the front row.
So, what was the question?
Noxious weeds.
Yeah. What can be done about it? It's, the pansy is like taking over. Just taking over.
Right.
You go down this swan, it's most of the vegetation in that field is tansy.
Right. I talked to Chris Cornwell, our vegetation management individual. He said that this year is actually a really bad year for tansy. And he said tansy is kind of cyclical. This happens to be, we're kind of coming back into the top of the cycle. The county, along the county roads, will treat it when we see it. if he gets calls from private individuals, depending on the size, you know, if you're out here at the end of James Frank on, you know, the high property where you're talking acres and acres, he doesn't have actually the ability to treat that in a way where it's financially feasible. Because we try not to get our spray truck out in the pastures because of low-hanging spray nozzles and that kind of thing. So we have an ATV that we use on some of the rougher areas. But with the ATV, he can only reach out so far. And he said he actually did do or attempted to do a private job for an individual, and they were really actually unhappy with what he ended up having to charge them for what he actually got done. And he said he's just not set up for that. You know, he does a little bit of biological control with the cinnabar, but that takes a lot of time for it to actually work. He does transfer worms from plant to plant and that kind of thing, but when you have that yellow bloom out in the field, it's kind of a wish that's never going to happen that's actually going to go away because of the biological control. So here locally, you know, it's kind of that we're beyond time to do anything with it this year. It's already bloomed. In the future, if within the city limits, if you have areas that you'd like to treat early, it would be worth a conversation with him. He did say that he's kind of done this voicemail tag with you a few times, and he's never actually made contact with you.
Never received the call.
Okay, well,
what is his?
His name is Chris Cornwell, and his phone number is 574-1248. And the way he plans his days is he's out early when he's actually applying because he tries to get out before the wind picks up. As soon as the wind comes up, then he's done for the day. And so he is always in his office end of the day. So 3:30, 4-ish to 5 o'clock. And those are the best times to get a hold of him. And he's more than willing to come and look at anything you want him to look at, and work over some kind of a control plan, whether it's biological, whether it's a little herbicide application, combination of the two, whether it's, like with Tansy, a hand pulling where he could coordinate with maybe the county work crew to go, you know, do that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
He kind of likes to look at all possible options and what makes the most sense for the area that's going to be treated. And so, you know, those are something that you need to work out with him, and he's more than willing. So, unfortunately for Tansy this year, it's a little late on that. But it would maybe be nice to start the conversation sometime now for next year. So, and if you want to give me your phone number or your card afterwards, I'll make sure that he gets that so we can get you guys together.
Yeah. Okay. So, there are charges.
Yes.
For this?
There would be. Yes, there would be.
On private property, right? I mean, what we do on public right-of-way, we don't charge. But
well, it depends on what it is. Yeah. Because if you bring in, like, the work crew to pull Tansy, then somebody's got to pay for the work crew. And so, depending on what process you're entering into, there could be charges. I'm not going to say that it's not. We can't work outside the right-of-way. Public right away without charging that individual. And so, and like I said, he's got a certain rate, which because of overhead and everything else is probably a lot higher than what you would typically pay like a private contractor for the same kind of application, because they're working on a totally different level. But there again, like I said, that would be something that you could work out beforehand, and he could actually get to it while it's still green before it goes yellow, and that's the best time to do it.
All right. So. Okay.
Any other questions on this subject? Comments? No, we're going to go down to 229 tax job.
And that's Roy again.
Roy.
Is that 1890?
Yes.
Okay. We smudged. Gotcha.
Oh.
That's fine. I got it.
1850.
Gotcha. I know nothing about the ODOT asphalt patch job. I know coming out, drove over the first bridge and it was a little bit on the rough side, but I can only assume that there's more maintenance to come. But yeah.
So what, someone brought that up.
I think that was before they did the overlay over that whole spot out here where it was cracked across the road. When they just put the two little strips down through it there when it was still cracked clear across the road, that went kind of...
Right, well, when you add that sunken spot out here on the corner,
I'm talking
that
about
one,
right out here.
Yeah.
But now they put a patch over the whole thing, but it's still kind of rough. When they ground it down, they could have just ground the whole thing down and then patched it down.
Yeah, I can't really speak on what, ODOT's process. I know that we have some areas on our county roads that are rougher than a cob, and I would really like to be able to straighten them out, but you can only get to so much, especially when you're financially strapped. But I don't know what ODOT's position is. I know that they have priorities on their state highways. And I know that Highway 229 is a priority slightly less than like Highway 20 and Highway 101 and Highway 18. So that's how the pecking order goes. And if you go out to Highway 180 between Eddyville, Nashville, and Blodgett, that's another step down. And probably north of town here to Kernville the same way. So, that would be a conversation that you'd want to have with an ODOT representative.
Yeah. So... You don't have any influence over them.
I have absolutely zero influence over them. I like to make suggestions, but no influence.
The obvious is the person who
they're
going
to do.
Yeah, if you'll get me some information, I can contact the person I work with, the project manager for the area. Usually they're pretty responsive, or will provide an explanation.
Okay.
But let me know the specifics, and I'll reach out to Franny.
Okay. Then 229 tried the same thing, but new guardrails. Is it a leak caused at the guardrail?
Yeah, that's
a little...
Yeah,
I'll
get it down. I was talking to Alan about that.
It's probably beside your job. Yeah, in April, the state was putting the guardrails up. They had a contractor in to get a lot of the state highways, and they called it, the contractor called it for utility locates. We have a 6-inch water main out there that feeds Camp 12. And we went out and located it, and they came out, and I met with them, and they did their work. And then they came back a day or two later, the contractor did, and there was water coming up by their last post they put in. And their assumption was that we mismarked our water main. And so we were pretty confident to locate, but I called around, I called the state and asked, do you guys have any storm drains in here? We have nothing there. Nobody had anything else there, so we were the only line there. So we went ahead and got a contractor, dug it up, and found out they did have a storm drain there, and the contractor punctured it and plugged it. But we incurred cost finding that out. And so so what they did, when we found out what was going on, we went out, got the guardrail contractor to come out, and then he had to go to the beach and bring somebody out from them, and they made a deal with Dale's Lake to make the repair of their pipe. It's an 8-inch corrugated pipe, it's all rotten, but they smashed right through it, and it built up and come up, and it was pouring out of it. I got pictures here. And so when they were there, I said, well, by the way, we've got this we've got this bill here, and we've got our own time involved in this. And so they said, Gil, the district coordinator. And then I got a hold of him, and a few days later he called back and said, well, we weren't going to cover that. They weren't going to cover that because they said we didn't have to dig it up. Well, the water poured up, they pushed this post down within 3 feet of our water main. And we're the only pipe there, we need to dig it up. And so we're kind of at a standstill there. They paid Dale's Lake, whatever it was, $1,000, $1,300, and we got a $3,500 bill, plus a $1,200 bill we incurred for our equipment and materials. And they pretty much said they weren't going to do anything about it. So we've got all the paperwork here, and I don't know if there's anything you guys can do about that or not. It's
again, I'd be happy to reach out on that subject matter also.
I would appreciate that. And are you interested in seeing this packet I have? I can give it to you.
Sure, that would be fine.
What, an hour?
Whatever's easy.
I'll give it to you. There's pictures in there.
I probably won't get to ODOT until next week.
That'd be fine.
Yeah, you know, there's some stuff going on in the community. But
yeah, a little bit. Yeah, but see, our line is marked correctly. It's right on. And so, and it wasn't damaged, but...
What may happen is that after I reach out to ODOT, we'll have whoever is the appropriate person at ODOT talk to you.
Okay.
But we'll get the right people talking.
Right. That'd be great. Yeah.
Happy to do it.
Just so you understand that we've kind of divided up the commission on a natural tendency of Bill handles the human resource health issues. I handle a lot of the natural resource issues and things along that line. We all are responsible, and Doug does a lot of them. State highways, I do a lot of the county roads. You can talk to any one of us. Don't hesitate to talk to any one of us, but it's a natural tendency. If we see something, we're going to refer you to the person with the most expertise and influence. In this case, 229, you're talking to the right man.
And I currently chair the Area Commission on Transportation, which is a three-county commission that is advisory to ODOT. So I work closely with them.
Okay. That'd be great.
Reach out to them. So, and Mayor, if you get that additional information to me, we'll do 2-1. Okay.
Don't forget the poles, though,
because they left. Yeah, the other thing, I forgot about that. When they pull their post up on their old guardrails, they just leave the holes. And we almost felt a couple of them out there. And I asked him about that. And I said, you know, these are dangerous for people walking along there. And he said, well, they shouldn't be back there anyway. We're not going to cover them. And these things are deep. And so I can't imagine. We would never leave a hole like that.
Is that information in the material?
That is not in here. That is not in here. Right. I was concentrating on the other because
sure.
They pretty much said they didn't care.
Well, if you forward some information on that, I'll
okay.
We'll make it three.
Right, we can do that.
I've seen plenty of people walking out here on the other side of that guardrail outside of town where they fall in one of those holes. I'm not sure who's paying for that.
No, they're at least 3 feet deep. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
now we have some really nice shiny guardrails out here, but a highway that goes like...
I'll get the highway straightened out by the time the guardrails.
Yeah.
So the next subject is enforcement and with the city and sheriff or Mr. Shanks.
So we talked about it before with the enforcing. My understanding was the code enforcement for the city code.
Yeah. We'd like to know what you can enforce presently. Through the district, and then, you know, how do we get more?
Okay, so we always enforce state statute, and that's what we try to do, and I think we talked about that before. State statute, you know, because that's the easy one. We have a court to cite in on. I think you and I talked about, in order to enforce the code out here, we need some kind of something to cite into, some enforcement piece. I mean, we can still go up and talk about it, saying this is, you know, violation of the city code, this type of thing, but if we don't have the enforcement piece to go along with it, which is a court to cite in on, and maybe Council Belmont can maybe help, or I don't know if you've had a chance to talk with your city attorney about what the process would be to either, you know, cite in the circuit court or, you know, Walport has a municipal court. When I was the contract deputy in Depot Bay, and I think they still have it, they have a mechanism where we cited the circuit court from there. So I don't know if you are up on that or what. How we'd go about, where would we cite into? Is it just naturally?
Unfortunately, the word is right now that, you know, the county used to have a justice court, but we don't have one any longer. That was dissolved some years ago, actually. And so, really, unless there is a municipal court that which would be established by the city, there's a process to go through doing that. The citations would be in the circuit court.
Okay. And that's, we can just do that now, then?
Well, you can. Here's the deal with that, is that, you know, if you're going to do a city code violation in the circuit court, your city attorney is going to have to be the prosecutor on that, you know, unless it's a violation. I mean, there's some ways you could do
something. I think most of them are violations.
If they're violations, you can do that. But if it requires any kind of legal work behind, the city attorney needs to do that. So you're going to have to see what, you know, what that might cost. you know, if we're doing something like that. It's not necessarily the best mechanism. The county, when we do things, you know, when we're looking at various alternatives and options ourselves for code enforcement, but if it's a civil action that we take, you know, those are they take a lot of time. The courts are extremely busy. They don't prioritize the civil action. Sometimes it can you know, sit in court for a very long time before you actually get resolution of those. It's not necessarily the most efficient way, but we do it. We do civil violations there, but the county has the resources to do it for our code. You know, and it would be something the city would have to think about long and hard. I did talk to the mayor a little bit about one of the options, and the sheriff can maybe elaborate. We are looking at doing some expansion of our own code enforcement by actually bringing on some additional assistance, a position really to do code enforcement, and kind of re-examine the way we're doing some things there in the county. And that's something that the board authorized us to go forward with. We're working on the details of that now. I have actually been approached by a couple of cities, Walport, and Toledo are two Yahatzes, that are interested in, if once we get up in gear, we've got to do our own stuff first, and that's going to take some time to do, but the possibility of contracting with us to do some code enforcement, once we've got everything in place and we've have kind of caught up on our stuff, whether or not we can do that, and that's something we can talk about with the city to really, this is more direct code violations, this would be your zoning violations. Those kinds of things, which aren't normally what the sheriff's department, the criminal deputies do, you know, enforcing these things. But it would be
that's
more
where I was going to say. You know, it kind of depends what ordinances you're having problems with now, too, because you know, if you're talking about things that like noise, this type of thing, you can look at the state statute, or we can look at your city code, and you know, even without the enforcement piece, we can still go over and say, you know, we can talk to them and say it's, you know, it's against city code, you got to do this type of thing. Because even code enforcement, even when throughout the county, a lot of it rarely goes to the enforcement piece where you have to do the citing. So a lot of it is just letting people know. And I think Lieutenant Shanks can verify, I think we've already done some things where somebody's called and we've had some. I think it wasn't log trucks or something?
Yeah, I call. Over weight limits. We've still got one down here next to the school that keeps parking his log truck down there, and the weight limit, it's in violation of our code. We've got signs posted on the streets.
Okay, so things like that, you know, we can try to take care of now. Just let us know. Yeah. Contact either Lieutenant Cameron, Sergeant on duty, or myself, and we can, you know, things like that. Just let us know it's still happening, and we can try to address that and work through those problems now without even going all of that whole elaborate enforcement piece.
Right. So,
is there anything else on that one? Or?
Yeah, well, how would we pay for it?
That's the hardest part. That's all communities. You know, all the communities are having that particular issue.
That's why we dissolved the Justice Court all those years ago.
The Justice Court was we were spending way more money on what we did, you know, than what it was generating in terms of fines, fees, and that kind of stuff. It was a big drain financially on the system.
Yeah, you're not going to make money at it. That's, you know,
we're going to start looking at that at all. This is a way to enforce your codes. This is basically a way to make sure people comply with the law.
Yeah, livability within the community is, you know, the number one reason why we have this.
I wish I had the answer for you in terms of money. That's the hard one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, since there is a, you know, we do have a contract out here, so as we do have two extra deputies out here, that we do have a little more time than we do in other areas around the county, that it would be a low priority. But we still, as those issues come up, let us know, and we can try to address them.
That are ordinances via the state statutes.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Great. So we've finished all the subjects that's on the list, and I know one subject that needless to say is important to everyone right now is the eclipse. How are you guys prepared? And what do you have going on here that we might worry about?
We're gonna open up the EOC right across the street here, and we're just going to monitor things and see what happens. Try to pick up the pieces. We're not really inviting anybody here, and we're putting out signs to keep people off the properties, keep them from damaging their ball fields and like that. Not a lot going on. Just gonna see what we need to do, and so the fire chief will be on hand, and his and volunteers. I will be at the are available for the EOC all weekend and Monday.
And we're gonna have to make a presence out there too for that also. So.
Yes.
You have any comment?
Do I?
No.
Roy?
No. Any of you?
No, I just have a lot of extra presence out here. And, you know, I mean, if the fog comes in right on the coast, I mean, this is probably be the place where people are going to come. So, yeah.
Yeah, just stay there.
When they call, I say, sorry, it's 10:29 and it's still fogging. Don't worry.
Then the ambulance will be available for East Coast.
Okay.
Library restrooms will be open too, along with the porta potty in the park. So, if
we don't really have any porta potties.
Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen yet, so it's pretty hard to
predict. Yeah. I don't know if the school's allowing any access to parking areas or anything during it. It's a charter school compared to the other schools.
No,
haven't heard anything.
Yeah. What are some things you guys would like to talk about, Doug, Bill?
I might just mention the fact that I kind of taken the ball, Commissioner Thompson, several months ago, convened a group of people to look at the state data as far as the maritime sector. And I've convened a group that includes not only the state, but the ports, private sector. And really, this group is, excuse me, trying and addressing four different aspects of the maritime sector. And the first one we have accomplished, which was the passage of Senate Bill 867, which creates a task force whereby the state will look at the maritime sector and the value that it has economically to our state, and then compile data that supports those numbers. Second thing we're working on is to get that data in a form that is usable. Right now, the maritime sector is fractured and reported in a variety of different categories by the Labor Department. And so we're looking to get that data compiled so that it provides statistical support for what we know is the value and the criticalness of the maritime sector in the county. And the third thing is we're developing, working to get the different community colleges to develop a curricula that will provide educational opportunities for people that are interested in the maritime sector, have a maritime sector focus. And then the fourth thing is to create some job training programs where we'll actually be training people with the skills that have been identified by the private sector, training people to have those skills so that they'll be able to have family wage jobs. So it's all about maritime sector value to our state. And again, it's not just Lincoln County, it's not just the coast, it's really something that's a value to the entire state. So that's what we're doing here for the maritime sector.
Okay, well, there's no other subjects. It's only 6:30, but we can adjourn and come back with our regular meeting. We'll take a 10-minute break, and then we'll start